Archetypal Tarot Podcast explores universal human patterns, called archetypes, by investigating the major arcana of the ancient tarot. We recognize these archetypes because they are present in our own life stories, myths, and culture. Each card represents a stage of the journey for understanding the greater story of our lives.
Welcome to the Archetypal Tarot Podcast. I'm Julianne Gibeau, and with me is my co-conspirator, Sundara Quackenbush. Today, our subject is card number 15, the Devil. And so we're going to discuss what this archetypal character might mean for the hero's journey, as well as how the archetypes of the addict and the provocateur play a role in this stage. So how you doing, Sundara?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited about having the Devil join us today for this podcast.
I think it's totally appropriate. We've got it's just after New Year's here, and I'm sure many people are making resolutions, breaking resolutions, thinking about good habits and maybe ones that aren't so good for him. So timing seems to be good. So why don't we, as usual, take a look at our little devilish friend here as it's depicted in the Marseille deck, as well as we're going to look at the Rider-Waite, two pretty popular tarot decks.
Yeah, so in the Marseille's deck, we've got the Devil standing right here in the center.
It's the Devil wearing yoga pants. I'm sorry. Seriously, if you look at this card, I'll put it on the show notes. I just took a look at this. I'm like, wow, those are nice yoga pants. With a package, too. Oh, never mind.
Fully displayed anatomy through the yoga pants. Which is very much like, I'm sure, you know, what people are trying to do as they get into the They're like, I am going to sign up for a yoga class.
Yoga classes are full right now. The gym's pretty crowded.
Yeah. You know? Little belly here and some man boobs. There's an androgynous element to this Devil.
Yeah.
Absolutely to this Marseille's version. He's got bat wings and he appears to be left-handed, right?
And I think the most significant, if you look at the Marseille card, is there's the Devil, he, she, because it really does seem very androgynous, is holding the sword by the blade.
Yeah, there's no handle to the sword. That's really
it's
interesting.
It's basically just a big sharp piece of steel, so.
Whew, painful. And then below this devilish figure, we have these two little impish-looking characters that are tied by a rope that is attached to the base of looks like a vase of what the Devil is standing on, and these little imps have their hands tied behind their back, and they have these ropes that are fairly loose around the neck. I must make that observation at this moment. One imp even seems to be smiling as it's tied up by the Devil. The other one looks not quite as pleased.
And they're in this in both the Rider-Waite and the Marseille Yule, and most of the depictions of the Devil card, these two imps or these two characters are pretty clearly a masculine and feminine character. They do look like a man and a woman. And just to talk a little bit about the Rider-Waite, the Rider-Waite card is in this instance pretty similar. We have this sort of, it's more clear in the Rider-Waite that we've got this Pan type character, this a satyr who's half man, half animal. But it's scarier.
It is scary. The card background is darker. There's an upside down pentagram, which is often recognized as the symbol for the Devil. And he's frowning, whereas in the Marseille's, it's a smiling Devil, you know.
He's kind of crossing his eyes on that one.
He's crossing his eyes, you know, he looks pretty demeaning, deceptive, and so forth, but this guy's outright frowning in the Rider-Waite deck. An upside down torch that he's holding, and then those two more humanly looking imps this time around.
And they, as I think the most important part of these two characters that are chained up or tied up is that, and we'll talk about this a little later, is that the chains or the ropes around their neck, they're not exactly tight. They're not wearing collars. They're loose enough that you could take it off.
And they don't look in either of the cards like they're struggling to get free. They're just hanging out there.
To me, it's not a vision of hell, right? We see this devil character, but it's not necessarily that prototypical Christian view of hell where people are in, you know, forever in pain and in flames. This to me really strikes me as something symbolic that we need to take a look at. It's not as blatant, I think. And I think this card's really fascinating. I mean, it's huge. It's really, they're big archetypes that I look forward to kind of unpacking a little bit here.
Well, unpack we will do. So, but this is kind of weird that we reach these characters, right? So last card, we were at the Temperance. We had this very beautiful, peaceful, angelic angel.
Angel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had the angel last time around. And then here we are, we have the fallen angel. Seems completely opposite. So what sense can we make of this as a hero stage after the card of Temperance is the question we've got to figure out right now.
True. And to keep in mind that our next card is going to be the Tower. So we have this angel, devil, tower.
Wow.
So there's a really interesting story. And before we go too far into that, I wanted to point out what we were talking about earlier, Sundara, is we had the death card a couple cards ago, right? So there is this eagerness, I think, within all of us in terms of our lives when something dies or something goes away that we got to be reborn. You know, we want to go from A to Z real quickly because it's going to be uncomfortable. And we're rebirth isn't upon us yet. We are in this process. And if you look at these cards between death and judgment as being a part of this process, they are that mythological underworld, and we're still in it. And so to put it in that context, we can see that, yeah, it kind of makes sense that, you know, the angel kind of pulls us out of this death period, and we get a lot of information and lesson and guidance that we pick up from the angel. And then, of course, we're going to have to come to the devil and meet what I would consider shadows.
Yeah. That's right. And many people would prefer to skip this stage. But the beauty of the tarot is that it doesn't let us skip this stage. We've got to look at the shadowy aspects of ourselves. We have to look at what is keeping us from reaching a pivotal point of, you know, I've studied Jung. I don't want to say throw the wholeness world around, but I think this leads us into a good conversation about. So if we want to mediate with the angel,
mm-hmm.
we might start to feel like we have to do, we have to mediate, we have to be start to take on the responsibility of that mediation. So we may begin to strive for perfection.
Mm-hmm.
This is my rebirth period. I'm going to do it perfectly. I'm going to be fresh and new, mm-hmm. and it's all going to be great. Well, the devil allows us to look a little deeper than that into what our human nature. And also, given his bat wings and his half goat self, wearing yoga pants or not, we have to look at our animal natures.
That is what this is about. And I totally agree. I think it's so easy to think of the hero's journey as being a linear path. And I say this again, it's cyclical, right? And I think when we come upon the devil, because, you know, most of us have been around a few times. We've been around the circle any number of times. And we are always working with things that we crave and we desire, which is a lot to do with this card. And this sort of, we look at this as another time that we're going to consciously really take a look at what our relationship is to our body and our desires, emotional feelings, but this one is really focused on physically manifested, real world, tangible stuff. What are we addicted to? What are, you know, in terms of how we make our choices, how does the devil, how does the addict archetype, how does the provocateur provoke us to maybe make choices that aren't the best for us? And how did that affect us in the past? So we're coming around like on a circle to say, oh, okay, now's a good time for me to really take a look at that. And it's New Year's too. So a lot of people are really, really looking at like, wow, where do I let myself down? Where do I break promises?
But that superficial sort of, I'm not going to do A, B, and C in this mm-hmm. new year, they often don't last because don't. There's a deeper issue. And I often feel or have noticed that a denial or misunderstanding or complete blocking of the animal self mm-hmm. leads to the addiction
yeah.
because you feel like you're not being fed on a deep level.
Yeah.
Look at the whole results of the Victorian era. This blocking out of the sexual aspect mm-hmm. leads to the most depravity that you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, within that era. So I think it's good to take a look at this card as it's a friendly card in a way. It's like, hey, everybody is addicted to something or some idea or has some behavior. And, you know, in my practice, I do look at the addict archetype as being universal. Everyone has, to one degree or another, the addict working within them. And it's a good time of year to take a look at it and embrace it, to say, hey, wow, this is something I work with. And to not try to put it back in the corner or just try to change it, to engage in the process of working with it and understanding, you know, what's right about what you're working with. What is that? What is the message of that addiction trying to teach you, instead of just going, nope, I won't do it anymore, I'm going to shut the door. Mm-hmm. So the devil's, you know, this fallen angel archetype, this provocateur is provoking us to take a deeper look. And so, Sindera, I mean, I guess I had a question a little bit from a mythological standpoint. This character here, he looks a lot like Pan.
Mm-hmm.
Who's a trickster god, and what do you think about him, Pan, being this like half human, half animal creature? You know, I want to know more about what you think about that relationship to the body in terms of the animal.
Yeah, I think it's an invitation to look at one's natural self. Pan, you have him dancing around in his half goat embodiment, half human, half animal, and we have this opportunity here to look and see that connection within ourselves, to realize that we are animals. I mean, everyone always says animals as if they're not themselves an animal. So, and I think that leads to all kinds of problems. And so it's an invitation, definitely, through this mythological Pan creature. A professor of mine at Pacifica did a whole thesis on Pan. And so it's a very interesting character to take a look at. And in the Romani tarot, I believe it was one of my first tarot decks, I was like, yeah, I'm into the gypsies. It was like a real early mm-hmm. manifestation of my interest in tarot. But in that, they actually cast the devil as this Pan creature who's simply just falling out of a pot, causing mischief. You know, there's nothing more to it than that. That mm-hmm. it's just this kind of trickstery, mischievous element that allows us to play and to be ourselves. I recently saw that movie Shrek 2,
mm-hmm.
which I try and avoid films that have 2 in the title.
sequels suck.
But
yeah, not sequels. Always. Not always. Shrek 2 was good.
Shrek 2 was really good, and I didn't realize that. I think I even liked it better than the first mm-hmm. one. But it's all about accepting your ogre nature.
Accepting your inner ogre. That's
yeah, and I thought that film was so beautiful and such a departure from the usual Disney beautification fairy tale. You know, it's very much about accepting yourself as an animal that burps and farts and you know, is angry and moody sometimes. You know, those characters are angry and moody at points, and it's okay to be that way. So I think there's an opportunity here to accept oneself as a devil at times, to accept oneself mm-hmm. as an animal, and all of those needs that we have as human beings, as animals, not as evil, but as necessary to life. But if we deny those things from ourselves, then these attachments or addictions come in certain forms that have us and we don't have them.
Exactly. They take over. I think you make a really excellent point, because traditionally this card is about materialistic things, almost ignorance. And I think that ignorance comes from skipping this step of really looking at what's going on. So the kind of the example I want to use, and I think might be something that's pretty ubiquitous for people this time of year, is say something like weight loss, right? Because that really has a lot to do with your own relationship to your body. And the way many people take this stage is to in some ways mistreat their body, right? So it's like, you know, bad dog, you know, I'm gonna beat you into submission.
I want to punish you, liver.
I'm gonna run, you know, I'm gonna go to the gym. I mean, they really go pretty, they take the same archetype of addiction, mm-hmm. and maybe that addiction was food and drink earlier,
right.
And they just pick running on the treadmill, or, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna do it. And they're skipping the step where they're really relating to their body to go, what is going on? Like, maybe I'm not working with my body or feeding it in the way it needs to be, or giving it the exercise that it wants and needs. It's more like, you've been bad, I'm gonna punish you now. And that attitude is brought to light here, that you don't, you know, it's not necessary to look at it as a punishment, to look at the way you've treated your body in the past and the way you're going to treat it now, you know, symbolically is kind of the same. It's like, I punished myself then, but it felt good, and now I'm going to punish myself, and maybe it won't feel as good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this kind of idea of, if, you know, what are you a slave to right now? What
mm-hmm.
what are you hooked into? Is the supposed cure for your ills pretty much the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think a great lesson here is that if you suppress the pan, you know, he's just this kind of gentle, frolicking animal with some basic needs. If you push him down into the pot, you know, and don't let him come out to play, he's going to grow into this, you know, monstrous character, a more fierce devil that can come out in all sorts of ways that is just not going to feel good in the end.
There's that, to me, brings up the provocateur archetype. Is that provoking? When you say someone's impish or they're devilish, they tend to provoke things. And I think this is a purposeful step to provoke things in you. And it being New Year's and whatever, I mean, that provokes people to do a lot, to wake up New Year's Day kind of hungover and going, whoa, I'm not going to do that anymore. That kind of, you know, I mean, that's a provocation. I mean, there's something very provocative, but I think the danger is to just let that be a one-off. You've been provoked, and then you kind of do something, then you let it go. This one is saying, go deeper this time. Take a look at, you know, what about the material world have you disavowed yourself of, your relationship to your physical body? I personally recommend to people to open up the option of loving that physical part of yourself, and having a larger definition of who you are. You're not just an ego. You're not just a body. You're not just this spiritual presence. There is something totally unique about who you are in total. You know, it's kind of a gestalt. You know, you are more than the sum of your parts. But to include the body, and I'm thinking of the quote, and I'll put it on the website, the quote from Mary Oliver, the poet, it just occurred to me is, you know, all you need to, you don't need to be perfect. I'm paraphrasing it. You don't need to be perfect. You just need, you know, to love what that soft animal body loves.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, I think is a good and appropriate lesson for, you know, or a hint of what this card is talking about. And to pay attention to those physical instincts. And yet don't let them, you know, rule you. And this is like a time of contemplation and going deeper this time of, like, what is it really, really about?
Yeah. And how to have that conversation, how to go deeper. So all these parts that you feel are bad, you can literally have an active imagination conversation with that part of the body or with that urge or that craving. You can bring it into an animated life. And have a conversation with it. This was Carl Jung's approach of active imagination. Or if it's too hard to delve up an image out of your own craving, you can have a conversation with the devil card. You know, bring this animated, he's full of life, this devil, and have a conversation about what you think is bad, what you think the shoulds and shouldn'ts of life, the problems one might have with the animal nature or cravings and desires. what you're attached to. That these can be brought up into a conversation or journaling, if that sounds more normal mm-hmm. for you.
Any kind of safe space, I think, when you have come to the place like this where you feel the need to mention the unmentionable, and to do that in a safe, supportive group. I know there's a lot of 12-step groups. That's what they provide. Therapists, friends, you know, there are a lot of people this time of year who are like quitting smoking or dieting. And a big part of that is that group, right? You know, the group aspect where it's a safe space for people to go, oh, I did that too, or I do that too. And people tend to talk about their shadows, essentially, of, you know, all the things they did that were ridiculous while they were drinking heavily or, you know, smoking or whatever it is.
And the devil also gives us an opportunity to really connect in our relationships, whether it's a friendship or a partnership, is that if you can share that deepest, blackest, down there devil that you think you can't show anybody, when you can get the courage to share that with somebody, you actually open up an opportunity to bond with them deeper, to really show more of yourself with them, because they got that part of themselves as well, right? And then you're making it safe for them to share who they truly are with you as well.
So yeah, if you thought this was a scary card, hey, you know, there's so much here. And I think because it's the devil, and obviously there's just immense amount of history. And from Judeo-Christian, all of them, the devils basically exist in all the wisdom traditions, even Tibetan, Buddhist, everywhere. It's ubiquitous. But the idea that I think we're presenting here is the reason all of those traditions have a devil character is it's our collective projection of all the crap we don't want to
right.
look at.
That's right.
You know, I mean, it is powerful, and it is powerful because we repress it, and mm-hmm. and it gets it. The more you press it back, the more it gains power.
That's right.
You know, and
If anyone rejects that devil in you, it ain't worth your time.
well, it's a matter of projection. We will dislike and move away from anything that we see in someone else, that we see in ourselves, that mm-hmm. we're not ready to look at or we're not ready to work with. So it is a big deal, and this is, you know, we're still in the underworld here. We're still in this regrowth period where we're coming upon things like our passions, our temptations, to a degree doubt. You know, people can be addicted to doubt.
You wanted to jump to rebirth, you say. You wanted to get to the flowers and the seeds and the birds. Wow. We're going down further. Here we go.
Well, I think that skipping to that rebirth and flower and birds, it wouldn't really mean much. I don't think it would.
It would be like this movie where, yeah, they faced a little bit of adversity, but then it got better.
But then now we're in the Disney movie. This is, I think we're really more in like a Danish film at this point. We're going Lars von Trier for a little while.
Thanks for sticking with us.
I know. So I, if you don't mind, I'll talk a little bit more about the addict archetype. The addict really covers a lot of things. I mean, the shopaholic, the glutton, workaholic, the perfectionist. I mean, we can be addicted to anything besides the usual suspects of food and alcohol and sex.
Chocolate,
you know. I don't know. Let's leave chocolate out of this. But, but you can...
If you're going to ban chocolate, it's just going to sneak its way back in. I'm telling you right now.
We recommend small amounts of chocolate over a long period of time. but there's, I mean, even as out there as spiritual practice and the way the people approach their own practices, if your head and your heart are separated, if your head is saying one thing and your heart is saying another, and your will, which is what you do next, the way you make your choices, if there's a blockage there, if things aren't working, that's the addict. That's that, like, I am completely compelled to go and do this. And it's interesting.
Chocolate.
And when I... We've already talked about chocolate. We're fine. We'll get you some later. But when I Googled the addict archetype just recently, people came up with like the TV show Monk. I don't think it is the addict, but it's like he's compulsive about what he does. So there's no, you know, the head and the heart are there. So I think that's a decent example of of what it can be. And it's in its positive aspect, and believe me, there is one for this archetype, is that it will come up and remind us of where our power is in that moment. And it can recognize that an action or a substance can influence us in such a way that we start working on autopilot. Because when an addict is in full addict mode, there's basically a very narrow band. It's either I have what I want or I don't have it. It becomes very, very narrow. And that this recognizing it as this archetype that takes a hold of us can give us that first sort of glimpse of like, oh, wow, this is really, really taking over. And then from there, you can work with it, ask for help. And confronting it and being able to break an old pattern can be extremely freeing. I mean, there are so many people who've recovered from major addictions that said, you know what? I didn't realize I could do it. But when I did, I could do anything. You know, once I quit drinking or quit smoking or quit obsessing over being perfect, once you beat that, I mean, it's a big test that many of, I mean, I would say everybody has a little bit of the addict archetype one way or another. And things like perfectionism are just so socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. They are. I mean, you've got social pressure against drinking and drugs and sex and all of those things. So that, you know, that's there. But perfectionism, that, I mean, people tend to have rewards for being a perfectionist. I personally don't think that's right. It's the same thing. You're addicted to the unattainable to a degree.
And then it's all about the devil in the details.
And the devil is in the details. You want to talk about that a little bit more?
No.
No.
No, but what that means is that it's not the bigger picture that's being paid attention mm-hmm. to, that you're not submitting yourself to the real parts of yourself emerging. It's a dedication to this little thing. It's just got to be right here.
Exactly. You know. So that can happen to anybody. I mean, if you're people who are obsessed with their bodies and perfection, they can't see the big picture. They can't see the beauty of the total part of who they are. They're obsessing about their pinky toe that doesn't look right, or the extra little bit of fat that's on their butt or whatever it is. That's the devil in the details with the perfectionist is there's no way they're ever going to be happy until this one thing is fixed, and then they're going to find something else. So that's where that devil shows up, is you can't have any perspective of accepting yourself the way you are. And it's very difficult to be in relationship with a perfectionist. They're never happy. And that, you know, it's difficult to be in relationship with, you know, like that third partner, that obsessive, compulsive part that just says it has to be this way. So it's definitely something to look at the addict to go, you know, where is my true integrity and honesty, and where is that being compromised when I'm working with this, you know, addictive behavior. And to understand too, you know, everyone goes through it. And again, going back to processes and groups, to understand that this is, you know, this is how we can find our common humanity.
Yeah. So why don't we hunker down and explore some more films? And we're not going to throw some obvious. There's so many obvious devil movies out there.
Yeah.
But Julianne, you put together a list of some really amazing movies that can explore the devil archetype, the addict archetype.
Yeah. Yeah, you're so right. I didn't put any of the really obvious ones there, and because I think it's I really encourage people to, if there's any of these films you're interested in, rent them, get them on Netflix, whatever, watch them again, and that's a great way to learn about how these archetypes, you know, are in play in our lives. And oddly enough, what kind of came up for me for both the addict and sort of this devil stage and this obsessiveness, believe it or not, is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Mm.
And it doesn't really matter which...
Chocolate.
See? Can't. She's obsessed. All right. So we'll just dive fully into this whole Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And it doesn't matter which one you watch. The older one from the 70s or the more modern one. It's the same thing. These characters, each one of these kids and their guide or their parent are obsessed and kind of narcissistically obsessed with themselves and what they want. And that's totally the heart of this devil stage. And this card is like, it's all about getting what I want, whether it's the girl, the little rich girl who's like, I want it now, you know, and she's obsessed, to the TV kid who's all about television, the gum chewing girl, all of them, each of those characters, even Charlie, with his grandfather, have their own sort of obsession with, you know, what they want. And I think the beautiful part of the story is you kind of see the sort of mythopoetic, each one of those people kind of get what they deserve. And even though Charlie and his grandfather kind of break the rules, trying to get what they want, you know, they had fun with the bubbles and they floated around, there was a moment where they really, really faced that. And they realized that they had done wrong, and they have another, you know, there's a sense of rewriting themselves and kind of coming back. And this, the character Willy Wonka, he's a provocateur. He's devilish. He's poking people into things. And this whole trip, this whole factory tour of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was for him to find out who could inherit his kingdom. Who could he provoke each one of these to test them, to see where their heart really, really was. And, you know, the character of Charlie and the way his family is and everything, that it just, it worked out in this very, like, poetic, beautiful way where, you know, all of those other obsessions got dropped and he just kind of had to show up and admit that he was wrong and that he was sorry. And, you know, he kind of came out on the other side in this beautiful way. And so I thought it was kind of out of left field, but the more I thought about the film, I was like, that's totally it right there. And I think sort of a friendly, fun kind of movie to watch. And to kind of take that on the other side, the film Black Swan from a couple of years ago.
Oh, we saw that together.
Did we? Oh, we did.
Yeah.
We did.
Balboa Theater.
Yeah, it's true. That's another one. It's about obsession. It's the perfectionist archetype. It's how we can get absolutely obsessed with something. And two, with that, something worth noting is other people will support you in your addictions. Like the mother of the ballerina completely egged her daughter on and fed that obsessiveness. So people can, you know, you can bond on the light side of the addict in recognizing and supporting each other to make a change, but you can also bond in your common obsession over something. And that's something too that you can really investigate by watching that film. And one that's another one that's kind of out of left field is a film from, oh gosh, I think the late 90s, called Election. It's a film by Alexander Payne, and it's Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick. And there's so much obsession and addiction and trying to, you know, really, really trying to have like self-control and figure out what you want. There's a lot of denial and repression in it. And it's funny. It's funny and it's dark too. But I think that film Election is definitely all about this devil stage and bringing things out and denial. And then in the show notes, I've listed so many other great films that really talk about the addict archetype in probably a little more straightforward ways, like Anne Hathaway and Rachel Getting Married, Leaving Las Vegas with Nicolas Cage, the movie about Pollock I thought was great with Ed Harris. So there's a lot out there, and it's so common, and I think it's a good time of year to take a look at it and maybe face whatever your resolutions are in a different way, in a little more holistic way, rather than just shutting them out and trying to punish them and make them go away. Invite them in, you know, have a conversation with what's really, really going on and work with it, including the body. Oh, hey, my little coda to this whole thing, and I thought might be appropriate, is because addictions can be addicted to anything. A friend of mine the other day was talking about Oracle addiction. I was like, what, to the software? She's like, no. So like tarot cards. And I went, oh, that's big. I think everybody who works with tarot cards or any kind of system of divination or whatever you want to call it, you can get addicted to, I got to pull a card, or, mm-hmm. you know, you get so superstitious about making decisions that you really can get addicted to oracle cards or tarot cards. And that's something that we can fall into this whole category. Take another look at what your relationship is to the tarot. And from my own, and this happened years ago when I was younger, it's like, you know, you come to realize that if you keep pulling a tarot card for something and you get, you know, you keep trying to get the different answer because you don't like the first one that come up, the universe is going to send you something to throw you off course, and you get the trickster immediately, which to me is also this Pan character. So.
And did you know that tarot is the devil's tool?
This is what I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So be careful.
Sarcasm is the devil's tool, Sandara.
I guess me and the devil are just too great of pals these days.
Can you tell someone has the provocateur archetype?
I'm married to the provocateur type. also, since we're talking about recommendations, and in the theme of this card, which was getting in touch with your animal self, many of you who are listening to this podcast have probably already heard of Ted Andrews' Animal Speak book, which is just wonderful compilation of basic but interesting facts about all different kinds of animals, many different kinds. You can't get all of them in there, obviously. But a wonderful way to research animals, you know, and how they might be related to individual growth and symbolism and so forth. So if you have a dream about a certain animal, you can look it up in this book, or if it's just up for you and you're seeing a certain animal everywhere, take a look at it, see what it might mean for you. And it's also just a wonderful way to learn about and connect with the natural world and what's beyond human, and what makes us human sometimes is being connected to and having awareness of different lifestyles out there.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. And, all of a link to that and a link and resources and photos will all be in the show notes, which you can find out at the end of this recording. So I don't know. Have we done justice to the devil, do you think, Sandara?
Well, I would like to mention also that if you're left-handed...
it's the devil's hand.
Just saying. Well, actually, that means you're using your right brain a lot, which is very creative.
Are you left-handed, Sandara? I don't even know.
No, I'm right-handed. No, I'm right-handed unfortunately, too. Yes. But if you are left-handed, you may be using that creative right brain a little more than the rest of us. But of course, the creative right brain means you're the devil. So let's leave it there.
I knew you had a tie-in there somewhere. Yes. So, all right. Yes. Well, you know, it's been a fun
one. Well, look, the devil.
He's holding it with his left hand.
He's left-handed, you know. Okay, anyway.
We're going on. But as always, if you want to contact us, please send us an email at atpodcast@archetypist.com. We always love hearing from you, and we will be bringing you the next podcast on, drumroll, the Tower, coming up in about a month. So look for that one coming soon and check out the archives. We have, we're on like podcast 17 now. So if you like what you hear, and you like chocolate, then you should go back and listen to the rest of them. But until then, I hope everyone's having a great year, and take care of yourselves. Until next time, ciao. Thanks for listening to the Archetypal Tarot Podcast. For more information on this show and the resources that we talked about, go to the show notes at archetypist.com/2013/01/25/devil, or just go to archetypist.com and type in devil in the search box. Thanks so much.